This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Well, recently we learned valuable information about the weight loss drugs that are getting so much attention in the news. Our guest was Dr. Michael Camilleri from the Mayo Clinic. At first, these drugs were indicated to control blood sugars in diabetic patients, but later we learned they can also aid in weight loss. But taking a weight loss drug doesn't give you license to eat an unlimited amount of unhealthy food. Here today to explain the diet recommended to accompany these medications is our great friend, Emily Rubin, who's a registered dietitian, a licensed dietitian, and drumroll, just attained her master's in public health, which congratulations to you, Emily.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Well, among your other hats, you're the director of clinical dietetics in the Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital and the public relations chair for the Academy of Dietetics and Nutrition here in Philadelphia. So we're so fortunate to have Emily here. Emily, let's start with the drugs I'm referring to. We call them GLP-1s, and we'll explain that later why, but our listeners would recognize them as Ozempic, Wegovy, Rybelsus, Victoza, Saxenda, Mounjaro, and Zepbound. Sounds like another language, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And more and more are coming out. There's lots of clinical trials on these different medications because they have now become sort of the quote-unquote magic pill or magic treatment that people are looking for in order to lose weight.
Mm-hmm. So how do they work? Tell us a little bit about what you can tell.
The GLP-1 medications, such as these particular medications, actually mimic the natural hormone that makes us feel full and helps to regulate our appetite. So by taking this, there's the thinking that some of these people who need this hormone may lack it, but we're not really sure. But if you take this hormone, it will then make you feel full and help you lose weight and possibly reverse diabetes, which it was first indicated for.
Mm-hmm. So GLP stands for glucagon-like protein. Glucagon is that natural hormone, as you say, that signals our hunger center to say, I'm full, I've had enough to eat. And it also slows the emptying of the stomach. So, you know, when it's pathologic or because of diabetes or some other conditions, we call it gastroparesis. So if people hear that, I was just telling my medical students today in teaching that paralysis means no strength at all. Your arm is paralyzed. You can't move it at all. Paresis, or somebody who's hemiparetic, means half their body is weak, but you can still move it. So gastroparesis means your stomach still empties, but imagine eating a full meal and it sits there. Instead of going 55 miles an hour traffic, it's going 25 miles an hour. And you eat a meal and you say, oh man, I feel like I just swallowed an anchor.
Right, right. And some of these patients, especially if they're already diabetic or pre-diabetic, might even have gastroparesis and not realize it. And then they're put on this particular medicine, which will, again, slow down the emptying. So the food stays in the stomach, which then could cause multiple GI conditions such as reflux, constipation, abdominal pain, and multiple conditions that need to be addressed if they're taking this medication, even before they take this medication, they really should see a dietitian or discuss all the risks that are involved.
So I love the way you explain this, because we always have a chat before we go on the air just to talk about what we want to emphasize. And these drugs aren't meant to be that magic pill that people are assuming it is. It has to be used in combination with other interventions.
Right, right. I mean, it could be, quote unquote, the magic pill. We don't really know in terms of if it's really going to, since more and more are coming out and they are showing, you know, patients are losing 20, 30, 40%. But again, what are these patients or what are these people eating is the big, big issue. A lot of times when people are losing that amount of weight, they're going through a medical intervention program where they might be getting labs done and they're monitored by a doctor. Often this now they're being prescribed from anybody and anywhere. And they're losing lots of weight. And are they getting vitamin labs done? Are we getting multiple labs done? Or is there nutrition deficiencies? Are patients dehydrated? Are they getting enough nutrition? Like what is going on? And that's the part that I think is lacking.
Oh, so definitely don't order these online someplace without being monitored. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But I think the other thing that you emphasize is you can't just take the pill and assume that's going to do the job for you. We're going to talk about the diet that you've outlined so beautifully. We have to add exercise, behavioral therapy, meaning I have to try my best to teach myself that when I start to feel full, I could take a little break and eat later, but better to try to learn better habits if you can. Obesity right, right. and being overweight, it's a disease and people need help. And it's not just the magic of a pill. It's the whole profile.
It still can't, just like when bariatric surgery first came out, that was the easy fix. And then what do we see? Patients starting to regain the weight. This is the same kind of treatment, because now we're saying you may have to be on this particular medicine for life. And that being said, we need to know the quality of your food. For instance, the American Medical Association just came out with an article saying that food quality is extremely important, like following a Mediterranean diet, following high fiber, which some of these foods may be missed, and a balanced diet, following a diet if they can't eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that when people are listening to us converse about a medical topic, one of the best ways to get our message across is to dispel myths. What are things that people misinterpret that we can clarify? For instance, you take the pill, you can eat whatever you want when you're taking these medications. Why is that right or wrong?
No, well, I mean, obviously that's not ideal, because for lifelong, that's not going to work. And you know what? The patients that do decide to go eat a cheeseburger or French fries, they're vomiting, they feel nauseous, and they can't eat for 3 days, and they're dehydrated, most of them.
And that's because why?
Because the food's sitting in the stomach, and it's not meant, those particular foods are not meant to be eaten when you have this medication. And that's what's so good about this medication, quote unquote, is that it's making people, they're starting to realize, oh my God, when I eat these fried foods, I now can't eat them anymore because they make me sick. But then sometimes they may overeat, or they may just grab the wrong food, or maybe eat a quarter of it, and then they're still not getting enough total nutrition or choosing foods from the right food group.
So cheeseburger and French fries basically have a good deal of fat. And fat, if I'm right, I'm not a dietitian, empties the most slowly of the food groups. So if you really do eat an anchor, if your speed limit is 25 miles an hour, the speed your stomach's traveling is 25 miles an hour, and you eat a burger and fries and maybe a couple of chips on the side. So you want the patient on this medication to see a dietitian.
Right, exactly.
Especially if they're diabetic, but who specializes in diabetes management, because you think people, you need a personalized meal plan, go along with the medical regimen, and set up some health goals. And the other thing is, can a person lose weight even if they're not eating a healthy diet?
I mean, they can, because the way this diet actually, the way this medicine, what it's sort of controlling, it's controlling you not to be hungry. So therefore, if you're eating 500 or less a day, or only 1,000 calories a day, and you were somebody who was eating 3,000 calories a day, you're going to lose weight. And that's where we come into the problem of the weight, you're losing too much weight too quickly. And then you see other side effects like hair loss or fatigue or unable to exercise because you're just eating not enough. And, everybody wants that quick weight loss, but that comes with, again, complications.
Mm-hmm. But I guess, too, as you've said so many times, these medications are much more effective combined with, obviously, a healthy diet that you're going to outline for us and regular exercise. And that doesn't mean you have to go to the gym 5 times a week. It means getting up and walking, even if you walk a mile. or go up and down the steps instead of an elevator. All those tricks that we say that will add steps to your day and get you moving.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's called activity of daily living. So sometimes, you know, patients are immobile or just not walking around at all. So, you know, if you park farther away from the grocery store, if you take the steps instead of the elevator, just every daily activity. Sometimes it's not necessary to go start running if you've never run before. Mm-hmm. It just gets normal steps in.
Well, the whole thing is, I remember learning several years ago when I was researching a topic for the show that physical activity can help control your blood sugars even if you don't lose weight. Just that in itself makes me think, boy, right. If people knew that. The whole purpose of our show is to bring up these little pearls of wisdom. Did you know that if you just move around and exercise, your sugars are going to behave more responsibly? We want responsible sugar levels. Now, your sugars are going to be more cooperative even if you don't lose weight. So all the more reason to combine the medication, good diet. So do you have to follow a low-carb diet when you're taking these meds?
Well, the concern is they sometimes do recommend a low-carbohydrate diet because if your appetite is so decreased and then you start losing too much weight too quickly, you need to actually eat more protein. Protein comes first. So we want to do protein, lean protein, chicken, turkey, fish, tuna. Sometimes you can't even tolerate that, like bone broth, some of the protein shakes. Secondary should be fruits and vegetables, which will give us some fiber and vitamins and minerals. And then third should be the carbohydrates. So carbohydrates actually do come less because people are eating such a minimal amount of calories that they need to get the protein first for their muscles. So they have muscle stores.
It'll be interesting in the future after people, you know, large numbers of people are being studied and followed, if we'll see an increase in gallstones. I just gave a lecture to medical students, and I said, you know, when I was in training, I did a fellowship in GI, but I also did an extra year in nutrition. Not super practical nutrition that you can offer, but IV formulas and tube feeding formulas, you know, really sick inpatient nutrition. But we did study fad diets, and back in the late 80s, there were diets that involved eating less than 1,000 calories a day. And we think of the gallbladder sending bile down to break down fat, but it actually participates every time you eat, even a little bit. And the less it's stimulated, the more likely the bile is going to become static and form gallstones. So it'll be interesting if people eat.
Yeah, because with that is very common. So when you lose weight very quickly and if you follow, depending on, you know, very low fat diet, you could definitely develop gallstones. And we've seen it in the bariatric patients so very well. But are these patients necessarily being monitored for that? And that's why, you know, you don't want to lose 10 pounds in a week. It might sound, you know, appetizing or perfect in a perfect scenario to fit into a dress, but the long term, it's not.
Well, and as you say, there's no one size fits all for every patient. Somebody might start taking these medications. They already have diabetes and their stomach's already slow in motion. Somebody else is taking it for the first time. I would think it might take a little bit of time to adjust to the side effects. Do they taper off after a while, after somebody's been on them?
Right. So that there's some newer research behind that. So again, the one thing we want to do is start at a low dose, which recently has been actually very hard to get because, again, everybody's sort of, you know, hopping on the bandwagon of getting these meds, so we can't even get the starting dose. But if we can get the starting dose, and my recommendation would be to stay on the starting dose as long as possible if you're losing a slow amount of weight. Some patients are going from 2 weeks, then doubling the dose, you're going to the next dose, and that's when we start to see more GI side effects. So that's why I really like the starting to lower the dose. They are thinking that, and this is the point where patients may want to come off, or the whole point of having it for the rest of their lives, are you going to gain weight after you come off of it, if you want to come off of it? So you could do it every other sort of taper, or if we can learn how to eat, because it all starts up here, you might not have to, you know, stay on that medicine forever. The whole point is this medicine is not increasing your metabolism. All it's doing is decreasing your appetite. So if we can figure that out through a diet, that's another approach as well.
And as you always say, depending on what you choose to eat, high fiber makes you feel full. So if you have a piece of fruit and fiber cereal, you're less likely to reach for a pancake or strips of bacon, which processed food. I really don't think that obesity in itself is quantity of food that's causing increased risk in cancers. It's processed food. And on that note, let's take a little break. And we'll be back with Emily Rubin to talk more about the diet you should follow when you're on weight loss drugs.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor with Emily Rubin, our Master of Public Health, and registered dietitian, licensed dietitian from Thomas Jefferson University. Emily, we were talking about the popularity of these weight loss drugs that started as drugs that would control blood sugars. And we listed them. People are familiar with the terms Wegovy, Ozempic, Rybelsus, Mounjaro, Zepbound, Victoza, Saxenda. What would you recommend? Because we really want people on these drugs, either under the care of a doctor or if they get them, should not do it off the internet. Why is it so important that they see a dietitian to have that diet? What is the proper diet that you want people to follow?
Well, a couple of different things. A, there's a risk of side effects. So we need to know. I'm also a GI specialist. I got lucky. I'm an obesity specialist and a GI specialist. So you can take those two together. And then I have the perfect mix to help patients that are taking these particular medications. So we need to make sure that we understand the side effects, because at some point they're going to feel nauseous, constipated, diarrhea, abdominal pain. I mean, when you start to increase the dose, it's a given. I don't think I've had one patient that has not had one GI symptom. And then B, we want to make sure it's a balanced diet. So they're getting all their, you know, their protein, their carbohydrates. And then there's those days when our patients don't feel well, and it's like they can't eat protein. So where can we get it from other sources? So they might not get to that whole balanced diet until they get their symptoms resolved. You know, if they have GI symptoms, we might not get to the normal, like, protein, carbohydrate, vegetable, like, you know, a salad with grilled chicken on it and a yogurt and a piece of fruit might be something that might not be able for somebody to eat in the beginning until they're getting used to being on this medication. There's an adjustment period.
But I always love it when you break it down and you explain very simply, and then people walk away with a visual. We want you to eat high fiber foods. Now, in the last segment, we talked about the motility of the stomach, or the pace at which it empties can slow down, or that's part of the operation with these medications. It slows the stomach so you feel full more quickly, you eat less, your brain says, I haven't finished digesting the first half of that sandwich. I'm not going to eat the second half. People are eating less. And high fiber can take a while to empty. So maybe after a person adjusts to the medication and they get into a steady state, they can add more fiber. But initially,
hydration is key too, because sometimes, again, people just forget to drink, and they can't. This is the big thing too. They can't drink. And same thing with bariatric surgery too. You can't drink a whole lot with your food because you're going to get full too quickly. With gastroparesis, with bariatric, with GLP-1, you need to separate your liquids from your solids, because if you drink too much, you're not going to be able to eat your meal.
But in general, when you're advising somebody that you want to help a healthy diet, cut your appetite, high fiber foods like fruits, vegetables that are not cooked, whole grains, beans like legumes, nuts, and seeds, they help slow digestion too. They stabilize your sugars and they make you feel full, which in the end help control your sugars and your appetite, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Great balance. And I wish that would work. But for some reason these days, you know, with such the higher percentage of obesity and obesity issues, it's that alone is not working. So again, which we're going to talk about, but it becomes the whole brain sort of controlling why we eat, when we eat, where we eat.
And how about lean protein sources? What would you direct people to?
Yeah, so it'd be like, again, chicken without the skin. And then if you're going to do ground chicken, you want like 93% lean ground chicken, or 98% is actually a little bit better. And also with meat, you could do eggs or egg whites. You could do tofu. There's lots of different protein drinks. I mean, I prefer chewing protein, but if you can't get it in, you could do protein shakes. You could do, there's even like the plant-based protein now, which some people want to go that route instead of doing a whey-based. There's like pea protein is one, soy protein. There's multiple different options to get your protein in.
The high fiber foods we just mentioned and the lean protein sources both help to regulate sugars. Who would think that? You know, I guess if you fill up on that, you're not going to be eating as much in the way of carbs, but they also help to control appetite. So then we jump to the healthy fats. The healthy fats actually help with insulin, making insulin more effective and reduce inflammation. What are those healthy fats you direct people to?
Yeah, so that would be nuts like almonds, walnuts with omega-3, avocado you could do as well, and then cooking with olive oil. I still recommend limiting the fats because they're still possibly higher calories. And then again, eating too much of them will might make you feel too full and you won't be able to eat as well. And then choosing, the higher fat salmon, which is the fattier fishes like salmon and tuna is a good source too, because you want to make sure you get your omega-3s. Again, this is the whole point of getting a balanced, nutritious diet. And because there's patients that just take two bites of food and then they're done and they can't eat for a day. And then, so, where are they getting their nutrition from? Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting for people to hear that healthy fats help to reduce inflammation, because a lot of the literature suggests that inflammation is the nasty guy that bumps the risk for cancer and cardiovascular disease. That was the nasty guy in COVID. It caused inflammation and all kinds of nasty. So balancing the meals, I love that you emphasize that so much. You want to combine all three food groups, high fiber, or not food groups, but food types, high fiber, lean protein, and healthy fats, because it's good for energy. It prevents sugar spikes, and it really optimizes digestion and absorption. Let's talk about that for a minute.
So, this particular medicine, could cause malabsorption if you're, not eating enough, or you wind up with gastroparesis, just a little bit of malabsorption. We don't absorb our vitamins in our stomach. It's mainly in our small and large intestine. But if it's not getting there, or you're not intaking it, that becomes an issue. So that's, again, we want to do smaller meals, splitting your meals in half, adding, again, hydration beverages, even like a vitamin water, something in order to get your nutrition in another way if it's not going to work through regular food.
You just mentioned something very interesting. Probably in the 90s, a way to promote weight loss was malabsorption, meaning mal meaning bad,
right.
Latin for not good, absorption, not absorbing. Do you remember WOW chips? There was an artificial fat called olestra.
Right, exactly.
And they were making food products with it, and it would slip right on through because the molecules were so big, the intestine couldn't absorb them. And if fat leaves inappropriately, if it leaves too quickly, it pulls vitamins with it. So keep in mind, another reason for our listeners to hear you say that you can malabsorb, you can be missing absorbing some really essential vitamins. You got to be followed by a dietitian and a doctor. Don't try this at home. Don't do this on your own. Don't be your own Dr. Google. Portion control, no matter what, that's always important.
If in the right person, if it's working in the right medication, sometimes we have to shift different meds because they might not get that same reaction or symptom or side effect. But yes, eating portion control, you won't be able to eat a Thanksgiving style meal, like a 3-course meal anymore. You might just be able to eat the appetizer, not get, the dinner and the dessert, which is, obviously good and bad. It was interesting. There's another topic too. It's like, what's going to be happening to our food industry if everybody's on this medication?
Oh gosh.
If producing food, is there going to be more food waste? Like, what are restaurants going to do, kind of thing? It's interesting also too, because I think Lizzo was on this particular medicine. She's like, she came off of it. She's like, I want to feel hungry. I want to eat, I miss that feeling. So that's, that whole concept, because, there's a lot more with food than just, obviously nutrition, because you need to eat to live, but also the social part of it.
And, yes.
You just don't want to lose all of those aspects when it comes to eating.
Well, and food is a happy place for, it's humanity. It's what brings us together. Companion,
right,
in Latin means, come means with, panos, I guess that's Greek for bread, come together to break bread. So there's a lot more to food than just, satisfying your hunger. And you want to, so important. You want to limit refined carbs and sugars. As we said earlier, it's processed meats, but also refined carbs and sugars. Let's talk about that.
Chips and, some of the packaged crackers and donuts and things like that, because they're the foods that are going to digest more quickly. Mm-hmm. They're going to spike blood sugars and make you want to sort of eat more. So a lot of our, patients that are on this medication are feeling they're not craving. They totally have lost that craving for that, which is very, very interesting.
Interesting.
They don't get that craving for, they don't want the cake. They don't want the donuts. They don't want those foods. And that's, that's almost ideal in a situation. That's the whole magic part of this. But again, it's making sure that you don't go to the extreme.
Life is a balance. So if somebody has a spike in their sugar because they've eaten a donut and washed it down with, Pepsi. That's not a good combo. Sugar in their coffee. Then it causes a spike in sugar. Your insulin goes up and it can make you feel even more hungry.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. So we want you to choose whole, unprocessed carbs like fruits and veggies. There are fruits that are considered carbs, right? Like grapes and maybe Honeycrisp apples, that kind of thing.
Right, that would be good. Let me just go back to the insulin spike. So what happens with these quick sugary foods is it spikes it up quickly. Mm-hmm. Then it brings you down. You get that sort of down. And when the blood sugars drop after having that spike, that's when you would feel hungry and tired and weak kind of thing.
And you mentioned you want to stay hydrated. Plenty of water.
But so some patients or some people just are so dehydrated because either they're having the vomiting or they're just not drinking water. So there's been great products out there that sort of meet the standard for the World Health Organization for hydration, which is basically the combination of the calcium, but sodium and potassium. And they're lower sugar as well. So that's really, sometimes I tell my patients, just sip on one of those particular drinks all day. And it really does help offset the GI symptom.
Well, plus I might have one, maybe two cups of coffee in a day. But if you drink a lot of caffeinated beverages, that's a diuretic. So it's going to cause you to void more or urinate more. Right. And alcohol can be a diuretic as well, yes?
Right. Alcohol has a much worse effect with diuretic than coffee. And if you're interesting, so I always say this too, and I told somebody this the other night, it was funny, dinner. But so coffee has the most caffeine in terms of caffeine. It's about 200 milligrams for like an 8 to 12 ounce cup. When that coffee sits all day, like let's say you don't want to drink, like you're just drinking it throughout the day, the more it sits in the water, the higher the caffeine.
Yummy.
Espresso actually has less caffeine than a regular cup of coffee because of there's a higher concentration of water with coffee. Tea is only about 45 to 50 milligrams of caffeine, and soda is like 25 to 30. Those energy drinks you have to watch out for. They're the unnatural forms of caffeine that I don't like that aren't regulated that cause GI issues and heart issues and anything else. Alcohol, for every glass of wine or 1 ounce of an alcoholic beverage, you have to compensate for 2 glasses of water to prevent that dehydrating effect. That being said, if you're not drinking enough during the day or eating enough foods with even fluids in them, you could be dehydrated very quickly on alcohol.
Interesting. So you mentioned earlier, you don't want to drink a lot of fluid with your meal because you're already limiting capacity because of slow-mo. But drink it through the day, just like eating, you want to have maybe 6 small meals through the day.
Right.
We use that ploy in so many GI conditions, but you're grazing and you're sipping. Maybe you're sitting at your desk. The thought of drinking coffee that's been sitting on my desk for 4 or 5 hours, you're drinking mud probably because it gets how very appealing.
Right.
Regular meal timing. Let's talk about that in our last minute or so.
Yeah, so a lot of times, you know, because you're not feeling hungry and the longer that you don't feel hungry, the longer you may not want to eat. So sometimes I will recommend setting your phone, you know, to as an alarm, as a reminder, okay, I need to eat, I need to drink. So you don't, and then we'll have exactly what you may need to eat or drink at that point, because patients definitely need structure.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we're going to jump into the next segment after the break, but that's why people shouldn't fast and just eat between 1 and 7 p.m. We can talk about that.
We'll talk about intermittent fasting. It would not work, but yes.
Because you're trying to outsmart your own natural clock. Let's take a little break to hear about this week's real champion. And when we come back, more from Emily Rubin from Jefferson. And now for your real champion. I call this segment Denise Clofine, the Miracle Worker. We just lived through the nightmare of COVID. Well, at one time, polio was one of the most feared diseases in the U.S. First arrived in America in 1894 and reached epidemic status in New York City by 1916. That same year, Archbishop Edmund Prendergast founded the St. Edmund's Home for Children Affected by Polio. Built at 44th and Haverford Avenue in Philadelphia, the home was administered by the Sisters of Bon Secours, meaning good help, an order devoted to caring for the sick. It was established by the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, and it was the first Catholic home of its kind in America. Then the spread of this crippling disease was eradicated by the Salk vaccine, leading to a gradual change in the needs of the children whom St. Edmund's served. The children were relocated to a larger home in Rosemont in 1956. The spacious campus allowed for development of a multi-sensory environment and state-of-the-art facilities and equipment. In the past, children were mostly challenged by physical impairments, but today, St. Edmund's supports children with severe and profound intellectual as well as physical disabilities, and many have complex medical profiles. Their disabilities are so extensive that their families are no longer able to care for them at home. Most are in wheelchairs. Many have cerebral palsy. 68% are sustained by enteral feedings, that's tube feedings, while others have reactive airways, osteoporosis, and seizures. The housing offers 24/7 nursing care, and many will require pervasive lifelong support. The home also provides occupational and physical therapy, speech, language, and hearing therapy, recreational, aquatic, and music therapy. I had the good fortune to learn about St. Edmund's Home from the administrator, Denise Clofine, who's been the angel in charge for more than 21 years. She was very excited when the opportunity came along because she was already drawn to serve in the field of intellectual disabilities almost 10 years before. In college, she had a dual major in special ed and elementary ed, then earned a Master of Education, and now serves as a member or sits on the board of several prominent associations related to special ed and intellectual disabilities. A classic servant leader, she directs and oversees all functions and operations of the home, but doesn't take any credit for her own strengths. Instead, she showers praises on the dedicated nurses, therapists, and direct support professionals, the DSPs, those who carefully and lovingly feed, bathe, change diapers, and meet each specific need of every child, and they range from children up to age 21. A DSP knows his or her child so well, they often realize a child is sick before the symptoms come. A lot of parents feel like the nurse is another member of their family, and for Denise, that's the greatest compliment she can hear. St. Edmund's is a Catholic home with a staff that's deeply committed and very spiritual, with members from many different faiths, and together, it brings out the best in all of us. Personally, I was overwhelmed by the extent of services listed on their website. Therapists work with vendors, hospitals, schools, and families. Speech therapy works on gestures, signals, language boards, and motor skills for feeding to improve food intake, things we take for granted. There's even a special seamstress who adapts the children's clothing to a wheelchair or a brace, each piece tailored for each special child. The ultimate goal of their holistic plan of care is to maximize the potential of each child. Denise and the staff are also proud of their open door policy to visit at any time and to make it possible to take their children home for a visit or a weekend. I asked Denise what lessons she has learned, and she replied, "I count my blessings every day. People get wrapped up in things that really don't matter. I have a daughter who just had a healthy baby girl, and while she was pregnant, people asked, 'Is it a boy or a girl?' And I just answered, 'I hope it's a baby who's healthy.'" Denise cherishes the love of her own daughter, but doesn't feel like she's the mother of an only child. She works every day with her other 44 children and considers her role a vocation, a calling to act as their mother too. Denise exudes kindness and warmth when she talks about St. Edmund's. As soon as we began to chat, I could hear her smile through the phone. I asked her to describe a typical day, and she said, "There's never a typical day. I make a list before I go to work, and it always changes when I get there." It brought me to tears when she said, "My reward includes the gifts of compassion, love, forgiveness, faith, and hope from these children who remind us that they are making our lives better and to be kind to one another. I feel very blessed and privileged. I go home each night knowing that we are truly making a difference in the lives of children with disabilities, and I'm humbled to work here." They say that St. Edmund's Home for Children is where miracles happen every day. I guess that makes Denise Clofine the miracle worker. We salute you, Denise Clofine, the staff, and the children at St. Edmund's Home. You're real champions.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers.
Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about the proper dietary intake that should accompany the intake of the medications that we're discussing that are getting so much attention in the news. Ozempic, Wegovy, Rybelsus, Victoza, Saxenda, Mounjaro, Zepbound, and more to come. I mention them all so that one name might be familiar to some listeners, but I try to mention them all so people know what we're talking about in general. Emily, what are the typical side effects? We mentioned some earlier, nausea, vomiting.
Mm-hmm. Right, so constipation. And constipation was a big one because, again, if the food's sitting in your stomach, it was constipation. Now they're seeing, and I actually had a patient with this a few weeks ago, diarrhea, because they actually he increased his dose. And he ate for 3 weeks. He had diarrhea. He thought it was a stomach bug. Here it was because he went to such a high dose of
particular,
his Mounjaro or Zepbound or whatever medication he was on. So it's, diarrhea as well. And then you see sometimes there's the newer thinking too, which is, hair loss, because obviously if you're not getting enough nutrition, you're going to lose hair. And then the big controversial side effect is the Ozempic face, where all of a sudden, you lose the fat pads in your face, as well. And that comes, you can't call it Ozempic face because bariatric surgery, if you lose, or any crash diet, if you lose weight too quickly and you're over a certain age, because that's the point.
Right.
You're going to lose, everybody loses in their face first. So that's why it's so important to eat a balanced diet and not to lose weight quickly. So you keep your youthfulness in your face, not, as well.
Interesting. Yeah. And I know there was a recent report that mentioned a trend. We don't have enough numbers of patients reporting it or seeing it, that some people are losing their taste for alcohol. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So again, they're linking this whole GLP because it's a brain hormone to the brain. It's making you take away from any kind of cravings, such as they've linked, I don't want to drink as much. And maybe because when you do drink, it does have an effect on the metabolism, where if you've lost weight and if you're not eating enough and drinking enough fluids, it dehydrates you quickly and you feel the alcohol and you might feel like you've had a hangover for 3 days after one or two drinks. So that could be part of it. But yes, drinking, gambling, shopping, any of those sort of compulsive behaviors, this is what this medicine, again, it's only been one study right now, has really shown some benefit. But it's not treated just for somebody who has a gambling problem, but just that whole concept of thinking about the way we think about certain activities and hobbies and foods. And
so in essence, if you're a little bit on the dehydrated side, that's being sustained, the alcohol is more concentrated. I wonder, too, if your metabolism is slowing a little bit, does your liver slow down and you metabolize the alcohol more slowly? Could that be part of it, I wonder? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we have to sort of go back to pathophys. But it takes, what I've learned, and it's also stuck in my mind, it takes 1 hour for one alcoholic beverage to metabolize. Mm-hmm. So that would be either, again, 12-ounce beer, a 6-ounce glass of wine, or a 1-ounce shot. So therefore, if you have one or two drinks in that time frame, that's when it goes into your liver, however your liver metabolizes, then goes into your bloodstream, and that's when you're sort of feeling the alcohol effect. But if you're not drinking or eating enough and you're drinking alcohol, it's almost like an alcoholic, then you would think it would have the effect of causing, because you have done nothing to latch onto that alcohol, to improve that alcohol, it would actually cause you, again, to not feel as good and cause you your alcohol, your blood level to be high, which is something you want to watch too if you're driving. If you're used to having that one or two glasses of wine with food and then all of a sudden you're not, you've lost this weight and you're not eating as much and then you do that same thing and then you can't drive,
Well, and it, even in healthy people that have they're not taking medications that can affect how they metabolize alcohol. With age, an aging healthy liver metabolizes more slowly. So that's why the little granny has one, a couple sips of wine and is flying around the dance floor. So add this to it and the alcohol is going to linger a little bit. And nail biting, you said too.
Mm-hmm. Nail biting, yeah. But when you lose weight and you're lower weight, the lower weight you are and less calories you eat, the slower your metabolism is. So that's what I'm saying. Like this medicine is not like the older forms of the other kinds of weight loss medications like Phentermine and things like that, that would speed up metabolism and decrease appetite. This just strictly just, you know, basically decreases your appetite.
So here's another myth that people think, okay, if I skip meals, if I'm not putting any deposit in the bank, I'm not going to feel that bloatedness and I'm not going to vomit. Why do we suggest that we not skip meals on these medications?
Malnutrition, number one. But the longer you don't eat, the more you're never going to feel hungry. And that comes to being on GLP-1 and not being on GLP-1 on these medications.
Why does that happen? Why if you, I notice myself, if I, some mornings, I'd rather sleep another 29 seconds than stop to eat. I'll just, okay, I'll have a break in the morning. I'll grab a coffee. I'll grab, you know, a yogurt. And if it doesn't happen as the day goes on, I'm like, okay, it's next week already. I don't need anything.
Right. It's almost like your body sort of storing that glycogen or just not eating. Yep. But the minute you start to eat, you're like, oh my God, I was really hungry. That might be different with somebody on a GLP-1. They might not have eaten for 9 hours and then they take a bite of food and they still don't want to eat. And it might not catch up to them that day, but in 3 days, like, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to pass out kind of thing because I don't have enough nutrition. I don't have enough hydration, etc.
So we don't want people to skip meals because they could already be malabsorbing or not absorbing all the calories they're taking in.
Right.
It can cause their sugars to fly up and down, which we don't want, and make their symptoms worse. Yeah,
right, exactly. So I've also seen too, because, you know, we're giving this now to a lot of patients that are not diabetic, that in some people could lower their, even though it's not supposed to, depending on people's blood sugar shifts, it may lower their blood sugar to not necessarily an abnormal low, but a low for them. And they, again, still may not feel right.
So
that's something to consider.
So when we see a patient who has gastroparesis because of diabetes or some medication, we advise them to eat low fat foods. Fat is the last guy to leave the, you know, to enter the race. We empty carbs quickly. That's why, oh, quick energy, have, you know, not a candy bar, but that's why it sends, you know, your energy levels up. Fat empties slowly. So if you're already in slow motion, you don't want to eat fatty foods. I mean, some, like you said, healthy.
Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily do a gastroparesis diet for these patients because that would be a low fat, but it would be a low fiber diet, which is indicated. If they present with gastroparesis symptoms, like the nausea, vomiting feeling, can't eat, then I would present that diet, or on days when they don't feel good, I don't do that diet. I would do a normal, healthy, balanced weight loss diet, which again, high protein, high fiber, fresh fruits and vegetables, and carbohydrates that are, you know, whole grain carbohydrates, if they can fit them into their meal plan. But not unless they present with gastroparesis like symptoms, then we switch to that diet. But that diet isn't necessarily healthy long term.
Okay. So the other good thing is that you mentioned, you clarified, not everybody gets the symptoms of gastroparesis or slow stomach. So we do want them to continue fiber. It helps them feel full. It helps regulate sugars and all those good things. And we want to cut down some of the fat anyway, or direct them to healthy fat.
Healthier fats, yeah. Exactly.
But if your stomach is being set up to empty more slowly, probably better to go back to that grazing idea. Try smaller, more frequent meals. It helps to reduce the volume in your stomach at any given time and will ease the discomfort until your body gets used to the drug, right?
Exactly. Well, for that would be along the same lines of gastroparesis, is separating liquids from solids and eating smaller meals. And that's given with a lot of different GI conditions.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talk about trigger foods, and we talk about, it's interesting, I see a lot of people who have acid reflux, and without all the extra information, food types that trigger reflux are the E's. Nicotine, that's not a food. Nicotine, caffeine, xanthine, which is chemical in chocolate. Nicotine promotes reflux. Caffeine, reflux. Xanthine, or too much chocolate, and fat and alcohol, all the things people love. But that said, so especially if we're getting ready for a slowdown, in these people, we really want to remind them, caffeine, what else?
Yeah, so if the food's going to be sitting in their stomach longer, or again, they're going to feel more full if they're prone to reflux. And a lot of these patients already have reflux anyway, because if they're obese, you know, that's part of one of the metabolic syndrome conditions. So again, it could exacerbate their reflux. The number one thing that, besides nicotine and Motrin, is also, or ibuprofen, is actually large volumes of food can actually promote reflux as well, especially in these patients. But chocolate, alcohol, white wine actually causes the most reflux.
Interesting.
White wine, then red wine, then beer, and then hard alcohol is actually the lowest because, again, I think it's the volume. Fried foods, late night eating is a really big one. Like if you're 9, 10 o'clock at night, you need at least 3 hours from when you eat to when you go to bed. And then the citrus and tomato products are sort of controversial. They don't actually affect that sphincter to cause acid, but they can still cause, you know, a little bit of irritation. So having smaller amounts would be better.
They don't cause the reflux, but if they are refluxed, you're going to taste it in your throat and your vocal cords and all that. So hydration, you already mentioned high potassium electrolyte drinks. That helps with hydration.
And sodium. Now, depending on the situation, some of these patients have high blood pressure. So sodium, we don't want, like some of these beverages are way high in sodium. So depending if their blood pressure is dropping, it's fine. But definitely the potassium is really good. And they make specific beverages just that have potassium in them. They make ones, I mean, can I give an example? Like, for instance, Body Armor has a lot of potassium and it doesn't have the sodium in it. Gatorade has the sodium in it, but not the potassium in it.
Right.
Then there's ones called Liquid IV Drip Drops, which are both high in sodium and potassium.
Mm-hmm. So. And I like it when you call it gentle cooking. Instead of frying the food, you want to steam it, boil it, bake it, grill it, rather than fry it. And make sure olive oil if you want to saute.
So olive oil is still fat. It's a healthier fat, but still in terms of calories and fat, 1 tablespoon of olive oil has 14 grams of fat in it. So my favorite thing to do is buy one of those spritzer bottles, which I don't have on my desk here. You put the oil, because a lot of people don't want necessarily the processed sprays. So you put the oil in that spritzer bottle and then you spritz it and you're getting the quantity or the quality of that olive oil without the quantity kind of thing, the taste and the actual.
That is a great suggestion. Even if people hear nothing else, a spritzer bottle you can get at the dollar store.
Amazon.
Oh, wow. And probably less. And what was the other? Air fryer.
That's my, like, I mean, I make this, and I've done, like, on Instagram, I made air fried vegetables. Like, your kids don't eat vegetables. Literally put them in the air fryer. You can put carrots in, you put broccoli in, you got a little bit of that olive oil spray, some Parmesan cheese, and it's, you could dip it in, like, you know, a low fat dip or just have it plain, and it's actually really good.
Good to remind people of those things. That's awesome. So, probiotic rich foods like yogurt and what else?
So yogurt, you could do like there's like kefir, there's probiotic foods. Well, some of the milks and cottage cheese add probiotic to them as well. So that
sauerkraut, maybe sauerkraut,
if they can tolerate that. But
yeah, I'm not a
probiotic food is really the Greek yogurt would be the best one.
Yeah. I mean, you can do so much with Greek yogurt. You can add a little fruit and all, and it tastes so good. And I tell my grandchildren, this is fancy ice cream. So they love yogurt now. I feel like that's one healthy thing I'm introducing.
All yogurt have probiotics in them. You're like, oh, I have a yogurt. It's got more probiotic. And not necessarily. And again, the refrigeration part, if it's not refrigerated properly, some of the probiotics or the good bacteria die. So you're getting all the benefits with any kind of yogurt. Again, I would choose a Greek yogurt, a lower sugar yogurt, because it's going to be higher in protein.
Well, again, if your motility, if your traffic is moving more slowly than usual, you're going to get stasis and bacteria buildup. We want to balance that gut bacteria.
Right.
You want to allow your body time to adjust these medications. Your symptoms may improve. And if they're not improving, talk to your provider. Don't do this at home by yourself. And if you have severe symptoms, talk to your doctor right away. We have about 30 seconds.
Yeah. So with the probiotics, some people want to buy the capsules. So, you know, I prefer to do the food first. And then if you want to try some of the over-the-counter recommended capsules, you know, I would discuss them with patients that have been studied a little bit better than others.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Emily, let's take a little break and we come back. Your weekly prescription when we wrap it up.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. Emily Rubin, as always, we've learned so much from you. Today, we talked about the diet that should be partnered with the medications that are getting so much attention for weight loss, like Wegovy and, Ozempic, Rybelsus, all the ones we've mentioned, Zepbound, Mounjaro, because you need to be monitored for the reasons you mentioned. Sometimes you're not absorbing all your calories. You can become vitamin deficient, side effects. It takes your body a little time to get used to these medications. And so if those symptoms persist or if they're severe to begin with, you got to tell your doctor. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, it's very important to, you know, if you decide to come in and either start the medicine or if you're, you know, if your friend is saying, oh, you know, my friend's taking it, I think it'd be a better protocol and even screening process in terms of both on every side, you know, if it's a nurse practitioner, if it's a doctor, if it's a dietitian, you know, every patient that I say that walks in, I always ask, I present, because it's out there in social media, it's everywhere. I ask them if they've been presented with this, just to see what their option, you know, if they have. And some of them have said yes, and some of them, I had one particular patient come to me because she said, you know, my doctor's starting me on this. I'm really, you know, I want to make sure I do this right, which is good because she was thinking and she was, you know, being proactive with her health. But you have to make sure before we just, you know, put you on a medicine, if you have an underlying GI issue, if you have reflux, if you have bloating, if you have diarrhea, constipation, before you start this, you need to either, you know, discuss it with your physician, see a dietitian anyway, but really approach the whole GI side effect with it and know the pros and cons of both. Because there are great benefits. You know, it's reversing cardiovascular disease and kidney disease and, you know, reversing diabetes, which is wonderful. But I think, again, it's a whole multidisciplinary approach.
And we talked about the most common myths. Should I skip certain meals to avoid side effects? No, that's just going to make your blood sugars more volatile. Can I eat whatever I want? Well, nobody would ask you that. This is not a license to go out and just eat candy and brownies and cookies and cheeseburgers all day, every day. You can really, those foods aren't great for you.
It's interesting because that, you know, nobody, even when this has been on television and certain specials, people are saying, okay, I'm eating less. Well, what are you eating less? Are you now eating a half a candy bar instead of a whole candy bar? Like, what are you eating? That's my big thing. What are you eating? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody knows. You know what I mean? That are being put on the list. What is any, you've lost 50 pounds. What did you eat? I don't know. You know, like, that's where the dietitian part comes in. Because again, you have to eat for the rest of your life. Like, even if this medicine, you know, is something you may be on forever. And what we're starting to see too is maybe patients are being, they need to switch to a medicine because, again, that particular one's not working. And do you want to be on a medicine forever? You know what I mean? Maybe you don't have to be if it is really, if you can figure out the behavior part or the timing of eating or choosing the right foods, it might be that option.
Good point, because we don't have enough data, that fun word that everybody started saying, because we don't have enough information. We haven't had people amass on this long enough. Yes, we've used it for several years for diabetes, but it may behave, these drugs might behave differently in a patient who doesn't have diabetes. And it's just being used with the idea of for weight control. So as always, balanced meals, the good foods, healthy fats. It would take us a while to rattle off all the good, healthy fats. That's why you need to treat yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else in your life. And the message is balanced foods, maybe graze 6 smaller meals throughout the day. So your new stomach speed limit adjusts to the medications and you stay hydrated. See a dietitian. Tell your doctor if you're not tolerating the well. And finally, Emily, why is it so important that you follow with a provider on a regular basis when you're on these meds?
Exactly, because you want to make sure, you know, you're getting all your essential nutrients, protein, carbohydrates, fats, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin B12. If you're losing 50 pounds, you're losing 30% of your weight and you're losing it quickly, we need to make sure you're doing it correctly. Like, what are you eating? Are you eating balanced? Are you feeling good? Are you having energy? You know, there's people who feel tired because they're just not getting the hydration. They're not getting the whole balanced meal effect. So you have to definitely see a dietitian because we personalize it. We're going to make it. I'm not going to give you a diet that I would give to patient A, to patient B. Everything you tell me that you like to eat, I make a diet geared towards your needs to meet your needs for now and for the rest of your life.
So a personalized meal plan is brilliant. And you can look at the internet to know what questions to ask, but you really need the expertise of a dietitian like Emily Rubin from Jefferson. And we thank you, Emily. Always learn so much from you.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to any of our shows again on Audacy.com. That's AUDACY.com. A special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, and we enjoy our association with Helio.com, the medical media company and information platform that offers the latest in healthcare news and information. Visit Helio.com for more articles about your diet when taking weight loss drugs. And please follow us on social media. Our numbers are growing, which makes us want to work even harder to bring you topics that help you better understand common and not so common medical conditions. Send a question to our medical mailbag. Let us know if you'd like us to mention your first name and town on the air. Write to info@yourradiodoctor.net. Tell us about a champion in your family, workplace, or community. Send it to info@yourradiodoctor.net. Join our campaign to celebrate new life. Your radio doctor is sponsoring a diaper drive called Diapers for Darlings. Help a needy mother comfort and love her new little darling, because every life is precious. To donate, visit YouGiveGoods.com. In the search bar, type Diapers for Darlings. Please continue to pray for peace in our world, our country, our families, and each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit YourRadioDoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.